The fourth and final oral argument case on today's calendar is number A18-1950, which is captioned "In the Matter of the Welfare of the Children of ASAW, EEA, and JLP." As everyone present knows, we have an appellant who has appeared. No party appeared as a respondent. No respondent's brief was filed, as reflected in an order of the chief judge. The case will be submitted without argument by respondent after appellant's argument. Mr. Cardle, you may approach and begin.
May it please the court, I represent the appellant, basically Rhea Borman Spears, who is seeking a reversal of a contempt finding and a sanction of $1,000. Normally, the standard review would be abuse of discretion, but there's some due process issues which I think can be reviewed de novo, and there's a limitation in the statute for $250 rather than $1,000. But I think to begin with, was there a technical violation of the court order? Yes. But my client pleads to the court that in the context of the case, there was a greater harm to the judicial process if she hadn't worked it through with the county attorney and with the court prior to the trial. This case originates from inaccurate conclusions by social workers of medical neglect on behalf of my client. I also represent the client below. When the government makes inaccurate conclusions regarding medical neglect in the child protection system, that means that, as in this case, a child is seized and taken from the parent. I was involved in the motion to dismiss practice. I read the transcript regarding the 72-hour hearing. The parent could have not been more clear that the sleep apnea had resolved months before the incident in the emergency room. So you had a small child with sleep apnea. This poor mother found a way to get to a pulmonologist, and the pulmonologist said, "You're right, finally now the sleep apnea has resolved itself." Months later, the child is taken to the emergency room, and the parent, for a cough, and the parent does sign a document against medical advice to remove the child, but only after waiting for hours after the resident had signed off on the discharge summary. So the resident is a doctor, but can't sign off the discharge summary. She had to go for multiple reasons. She couldn't wait another hour or two or whatever, and she was advised by the nurse of the testimony that this is the way to get out of the hospital. The social workers connected the signing out against medical advice to a misreading of the medical records and came up with this idea that the AMA was signed under a life-threatening situation. The pulmonologist's testimony obviously was very critical. She ended up being represented, Dr. Griffiths, by Paul Peterson, a well-known attorney around town, and he said, "No, I will not let the county nor the parents' council talk to my client." The medical records the county had through a June 1 order, and in preparation for the hearing today, I recognize the importance of the June 1 order. It basically said to third parties, the county can get all the medical records. So when it came down to the court's order on July 17th, I think there was some confusion because the county attorney, who was being super aggressive with the inaccurate narrative, was saying, "I need the release so I can interview Dr. Griffins. That's the way that I will get through Paul Peterson to talk to Dr. Griffins." Ms. Borman Spears said, "Well, you can't use a release that way. That would be a deposition, and I need to be present." The court has recognized, this Court of Appeals, that statements to medical professionals that are inaccurate about child abuse are defamatory. My client's concern was, with this inaccurate story that the county had come up with, they were gonna talk to Dr. Griffiths about that inaccurate story, like exaggerate the AMA to be more than what it was. And so she stood her ground, and then at the August 6th hearing, the judge said, "You've gotta sign those releases, but I'm not gonna let that argument be used for unilaterally interviewing without a deposition," or something like that. And so then we went to trial. Dr. Griffiths testified, and she testified that the mother had gone through all these steps to get a pulmonologist because of a mild case of sleep apnea that resolved itself months before the visit to the emergency room. So was the county prejudiced The June 1 order, they got the documents, the medical records, all the medical records. Two, they couldn't be prejudiced because they weren't able to interview Dr. Griffins without the attorney present because they had a right for a deposition. So the county could have called the deposition and gotten the interview, but my client would have been present. That wasn't what they wanted. And then third, the information presented at trial was completely exculpatory. And so that's important to understand. My client is, Rhea Borman Spears, is an officer of the court. And was her motive injustice or justice? And the court knows that contempt, on particularly an attorney, is a remedy that affects the reputation of the attorney, and that's why I've taken the case. I think if you look at the amount of resources that the county put into an inaccurate conclusion of medical neglect and the heroic efforts of the attorneys involved in the case to stop an unnecessary out-of-home placement, you'll see what was motivating the parents' counsel. We were trying to limit the defamatory effects of inaccurate conclusions from the very beginning.
It seems, now this contempt proceeding began, as far as I can discern from the record, began at the initiation of the district court. Is that correct? Or did the county attorney's office prompt it in some way?
No, it was initiated by the court.
A couple questions about the record as well. The order for which the district court was called the show cause hearing was, I think, an oral order made during the hearing on July 17, I believe, was the date.
Yeah, and then there was a written order that followed up, right?
There was?
Yeah, it's,
well,
it's in the addendum. I'll find it. Addendum 22. So that was the...
That's the order to show cause.
Right.
But that refers back to the order to show cause says the court ordered AW to sign releases on July 17, 2018, and again on August 6, 2018. Am I correct that both of those orders were made orally on the record and open?
Verbal, correct.
Not in writing. And the appellate record that I'm familiar with does not contain the transcripts of those two hearings. Am I missing something?
That's right, and we're not disagreeing that the July 17th order said that the release should be signed.
But then doesn't that beg some questions about the terms of the, well, if the district court is referring to releases, did the district court specify what the releases should say, or what their terms should be?
No, that was the confusion that I suggested. So if we look at the affidavit, addendum 24,
right?
The point is that paragraph 2, during the motion hearing on July 17th, the court ordered that Ms. Weber sign releases so that MCSS and the child's medical providers could share information with one another. Those releases were provided to Ms. Weber and her attorney by Ms. Knettle immediately following the hearing. But that has to be understood in light of the June 1 written court order, which we should have highlighted in the brief, but it basically says that the county is authorized to obtain Zavion's educational, medical, dental, psychological, psychiatric, and so forth records. So they already had access to all the records in paragraph 9 of the June 1 order.
Back to that June 1 hearing where the oral order was made, do you know, has a transcript been prepared of that hearing?
The June 1?
Right. I mean, I understand it's not in the record. We haven't seen it, but do you happen to know whether the court reporter has prepared the transcript for other purposes?
No, I don't. But
I meant to say the July 17.
No
transcript hearing.
No,
you don't know that it's been prepared or
no,
transcribed.
I do not know.
Okay.
Yeah. And so with respect to that, the June 1 order then says the county gets the records. I've experienced this. I've had more experience in this area. This is what courts do. They issue orders saying that third parties are unnamed have to cough up the medical records. Then the attorneys bring the document to the medical records departments, and they get the records. You don't use subpoenas generally in that. You get these court orders. And so the county had access to all the medical records. And then number two, this is the county's impression again, that the MCS and the child's medical providers could share information with one another. And so that's the point, is that the issue is with respect to Dr. Griffiths and whether the release would be used to get through Paul Peterson to have an interview without my client present. And so it really comes down to, we wanted a deposition, and an issue came up then at the subsequent hearing, and we were satisfied that that wasn't going to happen, and then we gave the releases over, and then we proceeded to trial. There wasn't any prejudice, because the county wasn't entitled to an interview without us present. They had the medical records prior to the trial because they were authorized the June 1 written order to receive all the medical records. So it's not about medical records, even though the release was about medical records. It's about county interviewing Dr. Griffiths without us being present, and we insisted on a deposition. We didn't want that interview to possibly happen because of the inaccurate narrative that was being presented, and from our point of view, that's a tort.
I was wondering, my understanding is that the releases were, the county gave the releases to Ms. Borman Spears, her client signed them, and then she decided to not return them to the county. And I'm kind of wondering why that happened in that order. Why not refrain from having the client sign them and so on? Is there anything, and I understand the record is limited, is there anything in the record about why they were signed if the attorney believed that they were inappropriate?
My client, Rhea Borman Spears, believes that they were unnecessary because there's already a court order releasing the medical records. And so she had the order signed because she understood she had to comply with the court order. But when it became obvious in these back and forth that they were going to be used to represent to Dr. Griffiths and a counsel, that this authorized an interview under this idea of medical professionals cooperating.
And is the release in our record? I haven't seen it.
No, I don't think it is.
Right. So does the release specifically refer to, is the release very general and that was the objection, or is the release very specific and that was the objection, that it specifically authorized unilateral ex parte interviews and so on?
That was what the dispute was about, and that's why they're discussing the term. Even though they were signed, they were discussing the terms of it and what it was, how it was going to be presented. The reason the record isn't complete is that Ms. Borman Spears brought to the hearing affidavits and the information, and the judge said the judge didn't want to see that. And that gets to the core of the issue. And I understand judges can think like military officers, generals, admirals, that orders need to be followed. But in the push and shove of litigation, there was a point here where the county was being so aggressive that they were going to abuse the rules, or abuse or misrepresent releases and the rules to get an interview, to continue to promote aggressively inaccurate narrative. And again, the information turned out to be exculpatory. In other words, I didn't get a chance, none of the team got a chance to talk to Dr. Griffiths before the trial because Paul Peterson was saying no, neither did the county. Then Dr. Griffiths testifies and we all find out that it's exculpatory. And then the judge, there wasn't any medical neglect. And I had pointed this out based on my client's testimony, but she's a low income, single mother, and who's going to believe her when the county goes after her? Nobody.
Question, there are so many tracks with regard to contempt, constructive, direct, criminal, civil. Do you think that this was a constructive criminal contempt order? What kind of contempt do you think this is?
Yeah, it was never specified. And I tried to sympathize with the court when I was looking through this, and I don't know why there wasn't an allowance for more process so that the Rhea Borman Spears could tell the court what happened, like I've told you. And it's such an important thing for an attorney not to be held in contempt because it affects their reputation, particularly if you're part of an established bar, right? All the prosecutors remember the criminal defense lawyer who was held in contempt. And here with the child protection proceedings, there's sort of a repeat business that Ms. Borman Spears is in. And in this particular case, it seems since Ms. Borman Spears did a good job of showing that the government's out-of-home placement was unnecessary, that it seemed almost inappropriate. And Ms. Borman Spears mentioned that at the end. You know, why are you looking at me when this whole narrative was concocted, contradicting the documents the county already had? At some point, the county should have stopped, but I think it's they never lose. And so what happens is, you know, we were on the case, and they knew it, I think, before trial that this was going to happen, but they went through trial anyway, and a three-day trial for this when the documents didn't add up. So I see my time's about out. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Mr. Cardell. Thank you for your argument. The case is submitted, and the court will issue its opinion within 90 days. That is the final oral argument on today's calendar, and so the court is now adjourned.